Speaking of reliability, friends talking about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Carl Carlson.
And this is Fred Schenkelberg. And thanks for joining us. I know you have lots and lots of options for podcasts. It's not too many out there on reliability work and reliability engineering. For those that are listening for the first time, welcome. We're going to chat about topics that Carl and I would and our other hosts would talk about at a coffee shop or whenever we meet each other, usually at conferences. For those that have listened for a long time, thanks for coming back and hanging out with us. But either case, please feel free to join the conversation. You can go over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And there's a form there that you can use to touch base with us. Give us a comment or feedback or an idea for a future episode. And, you know, Carl, I've been looking, I know you've been traveling and on vacation and enjoying the outdoors. And before we got on air, you were talking about some hikes you've been on and all this other cool stuff. See, I've been here in the trenches dealing with problems and working with clients and all that other good stuff. And I caught myself the other day when I was looking at a product for the first time, and there were connectors everywhere. And it's an early prototype, and they're working on creating a nice clean wiring harness and clean up all the connectors and get rid of a bunch of it. But for flexibility, they added a lot of connectors. And they asked me, and I objected right away. Oh, connectors, you need to get rid of those as much as you can.
Right.
And they asked me why. And I said, because they're not quite mechanical. They're not quite material science domain. They're not quite electrical. They're a little bit of everything. And they go intermittent, which makes them really hard to diagnose. They do all these other things in it. And it dawned on me that I say that a lot. I look at products and go, power supplies, connectors, and capacitors.
Yes, you know, indeed.
Right? And I'm sure you've got your list of favorites, but I don't know. Have you seen stuff like that?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm thinking back years ago, one of my lessons from the General Motors time when I worked there is that so many of the problems that we discover or see happen at the interfaces. And of course, connectors are interfacing between different systems. And it's just amazing how many of them. I found that well over half of the problems occur at interfaces. So the question becomes, Fred, for our little coffee shop discussion, is how do we deal with or address or consider interfaces when we are working on reliability?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's one of those, you know, I think it's come up by experience that I tend to look for, and I wouldn't have called them interfaces. I don't have to dive into more why you are choosing that term, because, you know, in capacitors, it's a breakdown of the dielectric, which is an interface between the dielectric solution and the plates, essentially, right? So at a very molecular level, so to speak, it's an interface. But I've also found that many, like you said, what my experience is with connectors is they come loose from whatever they're mounted to. So if somebody inserts a cable, and I had that problem with the phone I used years ago, is that I plug in the ear jack and the connector would just plunge deeper into the body of the phone. It wasn't, right. You know, I couldn't make an electrical connection because it physically wasn't connected to anything. And then connectors have that electrical part, you know, and corrosion and loss of spring force and all those things can happen. So I see what you mean. You know, there's different ways. When I think about it deeply, a lot of the failure analysis I deal with is like seals, right?
Yes.
If you're trying to keep moisture, right? You're trying to keep moisture out and the seal degrades. Now that interface between the seal material and and the housing fails and you lost the function of that seal.
Space Shuttle Challenger.
Well, that was O-rings. Yeah, that was a seal, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yes, it was. And all the adhesives that have to be used. There's so many examples. This is a well-known methodology in FMEA. Okay. And it's not as visible in reliability. So let me just think about this for a minute. Maybe we can explore some new areas here.
Okay.
The in FMEA, it's very clear in the FMEA block diagram. The whole purpose, one of the purposes of that block diagram, which is a requirement for doing an FMEA, is to visually show the interfaces. And good practice in FMEA block diagram says, let's differentiate between the physical connections, the material exchanges, the energy transfers, and the data exchanges. And this is well known practice. It's in all of the standards for FMEA, and and anybody that's done FMEA training knows about this.
Oh, it's in your book too, right? I imagine.
And it's in the book. Yep.
You got to plug the book a little bit.
Chapter five, yes. Okay. But I want to explore with you for a minute as to what we can learn from that in terms of reliability modeling, reliability assessments, reliability problems. If it's true that more than half of the problems occur at interfaces, then how do we model those? How do we take those into consideration when we're assessing and modeling reliability? That becomes a topic, and I'd like to explore that with you.
Yeah, no, I'm just thinking, I just recently did a very brief system or functional FMEA with the team, and we had a block diagram. It was a functional block diagram, and the wires, the lines between the blocks, which were the various functional subsystems within the system, essentially related to the communication between these different pieces, the electrical connection that we're carrying, commands and signals and sensor data and stuff like that. But what we didn't do was say, oh, there is a connector in there and consider it directly, for example, even though I know from experience that those connectors are commonly an issue. Are you suggesting, break it out more in the block diagram or as a specific focus is instead of saying, well, what happens in block A? Say it's a power supply. How can the power supply fail? And what are the issues there? And explore that. It's how does power come into the power supply? How does power come out of the power supply? Treat those as anchors also in that discussion? Okay.
Yes, very much so. I'm going to what is the power supply interface to? What adjacent subassemblies and subsystems? Mm-hmm. Also within the power supply, there's different components and then the interface between those components. Mm-hmm. And both of those should be lines in the block diagram. And those lines...
Yeah, the input lines, and output are. Internally, unless you recognize that the power supply needs a deeper dive, then we open the box and dive into it.
That's correct.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I agree with you completely there. Let me shift to the to a bicycle for a minute. Mm-hmm. And say you're looking at a handbrake subsystem of a bicycle, and it has a brake lever, it has a brake cable, a brake caliper, brake pads, and maybe some other parts. There's an interface between the brake lever and the brake cable. If you think about it for a minute,
there's a connector.
Connector, and it's got a little, it can be different designs depending on who's designing it. Mm-hmm. And that interface, if it doesn't perform properly, that cable will slip.
And you pull the handle and the cable doesn't move correspondingly, which is usually discovered on a downhill.
That's right. On the other hand, if that interface is too strong, then the user can't adjust it, or the service technician can't adjust it. And so you have a specific role of the interface, and those can be brought in. That function of the interface can be brought in as a function into the FMEA. And now the FMEA takes on not only what the handbrake subsystem does overall, stop the bicycle within a certain amount of distance, what have you, able to be used by, with a certain amount of force so that you don't get your hand too tired, but also can consider the function of the interfaces, such as that adjustable brake cable that attaches both to the brake caliper and the brake lever, mm-hmm. both those interfaces. So FMEAs can be a great way to address the function of the interface to be sure it is accomplished properly without problems. And what I'm, and that's a good technique in an FMEA. Now what I'm asking is, and it's sometimes fun to explore things that you haven't thought through all the way. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the purposes of podcasts is just to, is to exchange ideas. What I'm asking, if we do want to do a reliability model of the, you know, reliability block diagram, if you will, mm-hmm. of the handbrake subsystem, we're going to have in it the brake lever. We're going to have in it the brake cable, the brake caliper, the brake pad. What about the interfaces between the brake lever and the brake cable? What about the interface between the brake pad and possibly the front wheel rim?
Right.
How do we model those in the reliability block diagram?
Well, they each have their own probability of failure. So it's just another block in a series system, essentially. But it brings in the different kinds of questions of about what kind of failure mechanisms are involved. If, like, for the brake pad itself, we would consider its wear. If we're looking at just the brake pad and its rate of wear or its degradation or those things. But when you look at the interface between the brake pad and the rim, it's distance, alignment, debris, so inadvertently get a bunch of lubrication in there. It brings up a whole raft of different ways that fails by changing the focus. That's what I think you're going after here.
I think so. Right. And even take the brake pad to the brake caliper interface. And that's important because obviously we don't want that brake pad to slip.
Right.
So there's a little bolt there that keeps the pad in the right orientation and keeps it from slipping. Mm-hmm. So if in reliability we want to model, if we want to model all of the different problems that can occur, then problems at the interfaces have to either become their own block, or those interface problems need to be associated with one of the two interfacing components.
That's right. But make it clear which one, you know, what's included in each block and not included.
Yeah.
And I've done that in the past with power supplies, for example. It would be the box itself includes the cables and interfaces that are immediately associated with that box, like a power supply brick, right? And so from the wall plug to the discrete power supply to the cable going into the computer, that whole assembly is power supply. But it's not as explicit as what you're getting at, is which immediately for me brings up the different focus and different probability of failures is, well, I have the wall socket, I have a cable, and there's an interface between that and strain relief right from the plug to the cable and on both ends. And too often that just gets glossed over in the way I typically do it. And we focus on the power supply itself and tend to discount. And maybe that's why I see so many connector problems, is I haven't been paying attention to them.
Could be.
Well, it's about time I learned something.
I think one of the takeaways from this conversation, excuse me, is for us and reliability engineers in general to consider interfaces as in any reliability assessment or reliability system reliability model, and so that we don't miss those problems. In other words, if we stipulate that more than half the problems occur at interfaces, then let's be sure to take those into account.
And by making it explicit in the block diagram, and I can see where it could also be done in a fault tree analysis. It's a little more hard to, you know, call them individually, but there's usually a chain of events that occur, and the interfaces are certainly involved with that. But as you build it, is consider those.
And let me add one more dimension to the conversation, which is, you can have a handbrake subsystem that has interfaces within it, like between the brake caliper and the brake pad. Mm-hmm. And you can have the handbrake subsystem itself interface to other subassemblies.
Oh, like the frame.
Like the frame, exactly. And like, for instance, in the bicycle seat, that is its own subassembly, and you have springs and gel and you know, all the frame of the seat and things like that. Then you have an adjacent assembly called the frame, which has a seat post.
Right.
And then you interface between the seat and the seat post, and it has some mechanism, you know, with a little latch that has a tightening feature to it. Mm-hmm. And if that interface doesn't work properly, then the seat will slip, and you have problems. And I'm just wanting to stimulate conversation with reliability engineers in general as to consider these, not only the interfaces within the subassembly, like let's say you're doing a power, you're assessing reliability on a power system.
Right.
Then, but also, what about the power system adjacent interfaces to adjacent subassemblies? And those have to be taken into account. And it's not always clear where to place those problems or those probabilities of difficulty within the interface to adjacent systems.
Years ago, one of my clients, we were doing an FMEA, and we're looking at some of the issues they were having in the lab and refreshing what they've experienced. And one of the things he used the phrase of, well, that component was a victim, right? This other component overheats and it kills this one. It's not its own. It's not that the component was bad or wrong. This other one misbehaved and killed it. And so that's the kind of interface you're talking about, is if the power supply doesn't, if it transmits a spike through it, for example, a power surge goes through it, or when it starts up, it has an unusual signal, the downstream digital circuitry may take the hit for that. And is it that kind of interface you're looking at, is how, say, a power supply or power system, its interface is through those cables and so on, the physical part, but there's also an energy transfer that if it doesn't behave correctly, it destroys or damages other parts.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm looking for, Fred. And also, let's not forget to consider the human interface.
People use these products. Yeah.
Yes, indeed. And the human interface
now that you
is
mention
oftentimes
that,
missed.
Yeah, when you mention that, I mean, part of my interest, and you triggered something for me. One is I've got my next webinar is on human factors. And a topic I do want to talk to you about, it's part in my own deal, is to get up to speed on human factors and that human interface. Yet it is so often overlooked. I have often drawn a simple block diagram saying, well, we have system reliability at the top, and that's what we say we want 98% to last a year. That's our system goal. Now consider that there's hardware problems, software problems, or hardware parts of our system, software parts to our system, and there's this human part to our system.
Exactly.
And, you know, and you got to consider that. And very, very, very few products work without some interaction, either in the assembly process or during use. It's a huge area, a huge field in it itself.
It's a huge field. And this is very important, of course, in medical devices.
Yep.
But it's also important in other type devices. And in the FMEA world, we often do a separate FMEA called human interface, or we include the human interface in the system FMEA because it has to be somewhere. And that's really the point that I want to make, is that I'm not so much concerned where you take it up, mm-hmm. as long as you take it up somewhere.
That's right. Yeah. But it is yet another interface. And you're describing I know that you're off traveling and into the mountains and doing bike rides and hiking and all that stuff. And you're describing a very comfortable sounding seat on your bike.
Yes.
the interface I have with my road bike is very stiff. It was meant to be very, very light, very minimal comfort to it. I got off a bike ride yesterday and I'm like, oh, that seat sounds good. Maybe I should ask you what it is and change my interface.
Exactly. Well, good. This was a good exploration of the subject of interfaces, and I've been meaning to explore it in reliability, and I really appreciate that conversation.
Okay. Yeah. No, it was just, it's one of those things I know. I know I don't pay enough attention to it deliberately. I know it's the source of so many problems, and I haven't gone to the extent of trying to quantify it or anecdotally do it yet. I often joke with my clients that it's these types of components that we deal with, which are essentially interfacing energy or signaling or something of that line, is, I joke with them that that's what keeps me in business. So let's focus on that and make sure you don't want to have me back doing failure analysis for you, you know, that kind of thing. So, no, cool. Good. All right. So once again, thanks for joining us and listening to our discussions, but please feel free to join the discussion. You can go over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR, and there you can leave us a comment or feedback or an idea or topic or question you would like us to explore in a future episode. Every now and then, it's like on the order of like once a week or every 2 weeks, we get something there. And I suspect there's more than one person listening per week. So if you're hanging in there with us, we'd love to hear from you. And that really makes our day, but it also helps us make these episodes align with what you're interested in. And so we look forward to that. So with that, Carl, I think I'm going to go shopping for a new seat interface for my bike.
Very good. All right, Fred. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Talk to you later.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.